Welcome to the NDIS Property Australia podcast. Before starting this episode, we need to provide a general disclaimer. Information contained in this podcast is general in nature only. It does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. You need to consider your financial situation and needs before making any decisions based on the information in this podcast. And you should consider seeking independent and professional advice for your personal circumstances. All right, let's begin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the NDIS Property Australia podcast. Today, it's me being Erin, Matt and Min in the office, and we're just going to be doing a little bit of a rundown on SEA 101 because we've sort of realized that we never really went over the basics before we started getting into our podcast, and we just wanted to reel it back a little bit and talk a bit about the basics because we're going to Melbourne in a few days on Thursday, and we're going to be down there for the Disability Expo, and we're going to be meeting with a lot of people, so there'll be some really fun and exciting podcasts coming out soon. So I guess we'll start off with Matt, and he's just going to give us a bit of a rundown on the basics of what is SDA.
Thanks, Erin. So Specialist Disability Accommodation, or SDA, refers to properties that are built to meet strict design standards published by the National Disability Insurance Agency, or the NDIA. They essentially set the benchmark for innovative, accessible housing for people with disabilities in Australia.
Yeah.
So SDA is designed to meet varying access and support requirements that cater to the extreme functional impairment or very high support needs of NDIS participants.
Yeah.
So simply put, SDA dwellings are purpose-built homes designed to support people to live a more independent lifestyle and giving them the choice and control while still accessing high-quality supports from their home.
Yeah.
So essentially, SDA properties are sophisticated in their design and built with the goal of providing opportunities to actively engage in a day-to-day life in a home environment that is intuitive and designed to fit the needs of someone who's disabled.
Okay.
So typically, dwellings come standard with features such as wide doorways, accessible flooring, a range of assistive technology. This might include sensor LED lights to automated doors and windows. Could include hoists as well around the house to assist in movement and access. And the home environment itself should be fit to purpose for every participant and their lifestyle. So there's a number of different, I suppose, factors that should be considered in terms of, I guess, building an SDA house. So the first one, and I'll kind of go into a bit more detail about these, but the first one would be design category. So this is the type of design of the home. So there's four main categories, which I'll get into in a moment. And these kind of distinguish it from other builds. So as well as that, there's the build type, which obviously refers to the type of property. And then there's the location, which is obviously different depending on different areas, where you're building, that sort of thing. We've covered that in other episodes leading up to this. And then obviously additional features. So additional features would include things like the on-site overnight assistance, fire sprinklers in the house, hydrotherapy pools, those sort of things where they add to the what's necessary to be provided in a property to suit the lifestyle of participants.
Yeah.
So going back to, the build type, you know, you've got a few different build types as you would have in a residential market. So these can take many different shapes and sizes, and housing, especially in the SDA market, is never going to be a one-size-fits-all approach. So people tend to put put participants in categories, but each participant is different, even if they might fit into the same category.
Yeah.
So typically, the standard build type would be a house, might be a four-bedroom or three-bedroom, typically for two to three participants. So you might have a three-bedroom house, three-bathroom, which is for two participants and one on-site overnight assistance or one carer. And then you've got your four-bedroom house, which would be essentially three participants plus a carer. In terms of villas, which is another option for SDA housing, essentially multiple shared or individual dwellings on a block of land. So they might have a situation where they might share a carer between the villas, and there might be different setups where the carer is on site but might cater to multiple villas.
Do you mean like if it was like a community of villas sort of thing? Like,
correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. And then as people might be aware as well, apartments are also an option. So these are likely to be kind of scattered in a complex. So you might have most of the apartments would be standard residential, and then you've got a few SDA purpose-built apartments in the complex. So these apartments can have one or multiple bedrooms. Generally, there's one bedroom which is compliant SDA-wise to the needs of a participant. And the second or third bedroom might be occupied by a friend, a family member, a housemate who does not necessarily require SDA, or in some cases a carer. But mostly if there's an apartment sort of situation, you'll have someone who might be the carer as I mentioned before, with a villa situation where they care for multiple different apartments in the complex.
Mm-hmm.
The last, and I suppose not as common as the rest, is a group home. So a group home is generally home to four or more participants who share a living space or common areas.
Yeah, okay.
And so you might have, in a group home situation, you might have, say, four participants and one carer or something like that. You know, and obviously with a group home situation, you'd want a larger block of land and more room for the kind of participants to have their own area of the house, or, you know, you'd want a few media rooms or family rooms for them to spend time in.
Yeah. Could you have more than one category in a group home?
Yep, absolutely.
And yep. I guess on that, what are the different categories that go into an SDA home?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Erin. So in terms of SDA, as I mentioned before, there's four main categories or design categories for SDA housing. So the first category is improved livability. So improved livability is the minimum amount of care required for a house to be considered and stipulated in terms of being an NDIS property. So in order for it to be NDIS compliant, it's the minimum amount of care. So an improved livability house has a reasonable level of physical access and enhanced provision for participants with sensory, intellectual, or cognitive impairment, and it enables them to have a greater independence in their day-to-day life. So an IL house, or an improved livability, is essentially a smart home that's purpose-built as a disability home for people with low-level needs as far as the NDIS is concerned. Yeah.
So someone in an IL home, they usually don't have a carer, do they?
They do have a carer.
Oh, they do?
So they're required to have a carer on a 24/7 basis.
Okay.
But the carer might have a more kind of facilitating role as
okay.
opposed to where they're needed all the time.
They're just sort of there if needed.
If needed. And they might, you know, someone in an IL home, you know, might have a great deal of kind of control in a number of areas of their life, but in certain areas they would need a carer to be present.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So moving on from that, so the next category is fully accessible. So that incorporates a high level of physical access provision for participants with significant physical impairment. And it essentially promotes opportunities for independent engagement in day-to-day activities. So when I say independent engagement, I mean simple tasks like, for instance, getting things from the pantry.
Yeah.
Or getting things from the fridge, or getting their clothes, you know, from their wardrobe.
Yeah.
A FA or fully accessible house would allow them to do that independently without the use of a carer. Obviously, you would have a carer. That's there 24/7, but it just allows them to kind of have more autonomy over their life and allows things in their property to be which otherwise wouldn't be used by them, to give them an opportunity to be able to use that.
So yeah. Fully accessible would be something like the homes you talked about with Kim from Inclusive Living.
Correct.
The other day, yep. In that podcast.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Yep. So that would be a situation, yeah, where they a fully accessible house would be mostly people who, say, are in a wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
And they might, due to the fact that they're in a wheelchair, they might have less, functional ability as far as engaging with what's in the house.
Yeah,
and
okay.
A fully accessible house is designed to incorporate the house into their lifestyle, essentially.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yep. The third category is high physical support. So that's the level above FA or fully accessible. So I kind of see FA as HBS light or high physical support. So high physical support is a high level of physical access provision for participants with significant physical impairment and requiring very high levels of support. So participants in an HBS house generally require support in every area of their life. So everything in the house kind of needs to have an element where it can work with their disability.
And yeah.
So you might have situations where you have hoists to allow them to move from their bed to their wheelchair.
And bathroom, yeah.
Oh, okay, yep. Wow.
So the home obviously incorporates assistive technology and a very spacious design to create an environment that is intuitive for movement and support needs.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's the highest level of, SDA design for participants.
Okay.
So in a HBS house, because it's a high level of design, it can also have fully accessible and improved livability
of
participants.
Course. Yeah. So like in that situation, if you were building a group home, you'd most likely build it for like a HPS so that you
yes.
can have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you'd have a number of different participants from different design categories, essentially,
which,
as far as the SDA funding is concerned, they'd be funded for these different categories.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So the last design category is robust. So robust is essentially it's a property which is designed to have a high level of physical access provision. And it uses very resilient building materials combined to reduce the likelihood of reactive maintenance and day-to-day risk to the participant and members of the household and community. So a robust house is essentially built for participants who have unpredictable behavior patterns, where they could be prone to hurt themselves or in some cases the property. So the robust house is designed to cater for all those sort of situations. So in a robust house, you might have a sensory room which is designed to both help them in facilitate their lifestyle, but also allow them to be themselves, without risk of hurting themselves.
Yeah, so robust is essentially built for people with like psychosocial disorders. That's correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's really, really thick walls.
Yes. Sensory room, also known as a breakout room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So need to get away from everyone in the house and just to go in that little corner of the house and close the door and leave them alone, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like thick walls, thick windows.
It's also noise-proof, both from the inside and outside, because sometimes certain sounds can trigger someone who is in the robust category.
Yeah.
So that allows them in the breakout room or the sensory room, it's where they can kind of go there in an environment which doesn't present anything which might trigger them into an episode.
Okay. Yeah.
So those are the four main categories of design that SDA participants would fit in as far as their funding would be concerned.
Yeah. So I guess the next one is probably more your specialty, Min. It'd be why SDA? Why an SDA home?
Yeah, well, the government, by legislating SDA funding as an income stream, it's designed to subsidise the cost of accommodation because in the past the government has always covered these costs themselves, and they want to encourage the private market to come in to provide accommodation for the participants of the NDIS.
Mm-hmm.
So this will see the ownership of disability accommodation in the hands of investors and away from the government sector. And in theory, this will enable benefits of a competitive marketplace, such as, you know, quality, affordability, and sustainability long term. And that's the overall plan of this for 20 years moving ahead, I guess. With the various SDA providers offering different types of SDA builds and tenancy experiences, the idea is that the participants of the SDA will have a greater choice of how they live their lives and who they live with and where they live, you know.
Yeah.
So this makes these choices more beneficial to their preferences and their needs and allow them to continue to adapt to a better life long term, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sort of gives someone a forever home, you could say. It gives someone who might not have that option.
Yeah.
They can, you know, move to multiple places. Like they're maybe not constricted to like, say, one city or one town. They can go anywhere, which is really good. Mm. I guess another question would be what supports are available or provided in an SDA home?
Yeah. So this is a very good question to ask because a lot of people don't understand the civil side of it all. And this is the SIL section. So, and in the SIL section, you break it up to different services as well.
What's SIL stand for?
So, Supported Independent Living.
Yeah.
SIL. So, by separating the housing from the support provision, the participants are able to access a range of supports within their home. The participants agree to make this SDA home their forever home, as you say, Erin. And they will, I guess, enter into a tenancy agreement with the SDA provider, who acts independently away or independently of the chosen support provider or SIL provider.
Yeah.
And these participants can invite their chosen support providers to their homes and to cater for their changing needs and the lifestyles over time. And the examples of these are four. I'll just break it down to four categories here. There's SIL, Supported Independent Living. There's individual and shared core supports. Then there is individual living options, ILO, which is new in the US the last year or so, and informal supports. So they're the four categories of the support side. Now, let me explain to you what those four really mean. So SIL, Supported Independent Living, comes down to really 24/7 support, shared supports, meaning one carer on site looking after two or three different people, and a roster of care. With the individual and shared core supports, we're looking at support employed against a specific home and living goal, flexibly provided across the day. So it may be sometimes overnight care, maybe sometimes only, obviously, and sometimes a few hours here and there throughout the day.
So is that like there's not support 24/7?
Yes. And it may be employed against a specific capacity building or daily living goal. So the support is around the daily goal of living, how they want to live their lives.
Okay, yeah.
So the individual living option is a little bit different. You'll see these more in apartments kind of style and share combination. So support's designed and tailored to an individual, so around that person in itself. He lives by themselves in an apartment, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It can be delivered flexibly and creatively, whereby maybe a host with participant or a housemate with the participant, right?
Okay.
And when I say host, I mean like an actual carer living with them full time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you might have a 2-bedroom apartment with the participant.
Yeah, but 1-bedroom is the
carer living there full time. And that could involve formal and informal supports. Mm-hmm. Now, informal supports means mum and dad coming over to visit 3 days a week to help out 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
And they don't get paid for that, obviously. Yeah, so that's informal support. And then so the last one is informal supports, which is unpaid supports by family and friends and passive involvement in the day-to-day life. That's, yeah.
So essentially someone like lives independently, but like a family member lives with them.
Or come visits. Yeah. Not living with them, but coming to visit.
Okay.
Informal supports, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So if someone was looking to move into an SDA home, like, or they were looking for, say, a child or a friend or a family member or something to move into an SDA home, what kind of funding is available?
Well, for the benefit of the investors listening to this podcast, there's two income streams here. You've got the SDA funding legislated by the government, and the other one is the RRC, reasonable rent contribution. reasonable rent contributions is broken up into two different parts. One is the 25% of their pension, the DSP, disability support pension, 25% of that. And that's payable to a single person over the age of 21. And the other one is the Commonwealth CRA, Commonwealth Rent Assistance. So yeah. CRA, 100%, DSP, 25%, that equals the RRC, reasonable rent contribution. Yeah, so that's one part of it all.
Yeah.
And that's paid monthly.
Okay.
Payable from the government departments to the provider, and that gets sent over to the landlord.
The landlord. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it goes straight to, okay.
Yeah, so that's their contribution to the funding of the house.
Okay.
And that's normally works out to be about $9,700 per year per participant,
mm-hmm.
per room, okay? Another one is the SDA funding, which is, you know, which everyone knows about in terms of the calculations and the spreadsheets provided by the government. So the SDA funding will be included in an eligible participant's NDIS plan. As we discussed in one of our last previous episodes with Dante and Emilita, it's a big waiting list to get NDIS funding. So it's probably one, 2 years to get on board. And then you're another year to get the SDA funding. So, and that's assuming you go through perfectly fine. If you get appeals, it's probably another year. So it's two to four years.
To get SDA funding.
To get NDIS funding and SDA funding. Okay. Right? So the NDIA decides the amount of SDA funding that the participants will receive, and that's generally set as per how the NDIA determine what is reasonable and necessary.
Mm.
And the SDA funds are used to contribute towards the costs of the participant living in the home, which has been designed to cater for their needs. As Matt said, ILFA, Robust, or HBS.
Yeah. Mm. Is that monthly payments as well, or is that?
That's quarterly in arrears.
Quarterly, yep.
Quarterly.
Mm. So a lot of investors don't realise it's quarterly payments, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So a lot of people ask, well, how does the agreements work? Well, the participants sign a 1 or 2 year lease with the housing provider who looks after the house. But there's a clause in there that allows the participants to actually leave within 90 days' notice.
Like
break the lease.
Break the lease, yeah.
Because the government knows you can't hold them
hostage
in the house forever.
They
don't have the right to move out if they don't want to live there anymore for whatever reasons.
Yeah, sorry. So does a participant sign a lease with the landlord or with the provider?
With the provider.
Yeah, okay.
1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
And the estate provider would actually have on average, a 5 or 10 year lease with the landlord separately.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So essentially, you sign an agreement that the provider will find people to live in that house for, say, 10 years, but then that's how many years per participant?
Well, there's normally a very low turnover of tenancy in the SDA home.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason why they would leave is because there's a conflict between personalities and they can't get on with each other.
Or they
actually pass away. Or they want to move to interstate. So the movement of participants from house to house to house is pretty low.
Yeah, because, you know, like I said before, like it's looking for a home that they can live in for the rest of their life. Yeah. Like it's not really like, you know, most renters, they think about moving around. It's not like that at all for people that are participants.
Mm. I mean, look, for a normal person in life, in society, they don't move every year. They stay for 2-3 years and then go from there.
Yeah, because moving is a pain.
Yeah, it is a pain, pain in the butt, yes. So separate. Yeah, so that's pretty much the summary of what SDA funding is, and I've covered what the out-of-pocket expenses are. I mean, that's pretty much...
I think that's pretty 101, pretty basics covered, hey.
So, Matt, anything else we missed out on?
Don't think so. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah.
All the other topics we've covered in the last 17 episodes already, right?
So you sort of mentioned it throughout, like it's scattered. It's just this is a very, like, we're going to cover it all in one go, sort of.
Yep.
Okay, well, I guess... All I can say is stay tuned because we're going to Melbourne this week.
Yeah, so Melbourne, we'll be there for 5 days. We got a webinar to present on, a seminar to present at. We're going to the Melbourne Disability Expo on Friday and Saturday, the 1st of April, the 2nd of April.
Correct, yeah.
At the Melbourne Disability Convention Centre.
The Melbourne Convention Centre.
The Melbourne Convention Centre, yes. And then what else? We're going to be visiting some builders, doing some display homes, a factory,
doing some more podcasts. We have a few podcasts doing
that. We have quite a few, I think.
Six podcasts.
Yeah, I think at the moment we've got like six or seven coming up, and we're looking at booking more. So
yeah, so it'll be good. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah,
it's all the people in this room. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
amazing.
So that's about it then, isn't it?
I think pretty much covers it. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and stay tuned for the Melbourne trip.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure that you are subscribed and following us so that you can keep in the loop with all of our upcoming episodes. We would really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a written review, and to share this episode with those that can benefit. Until next time, catch you on the next episode.